Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Roy Harper podcast for March 2008. In this episode, some news, part 2 of the 2-part interview with Darren Crisp, the editor of Harper, this time we'll be looking at G, more listener feedback, and as usual, a selection of music. Now, right up front, I'd like to say I'm trying to keep the duration of these podcasts down after some recent feedback, particularly from people who want to burn the podcast to a CD and play them in the car and whatnot. Perfectly sensible idea, and I've been getting a bit worried that the podcasts have been getting rather long in duration anyway, so this is my first attempt to try and be really brief. Of course, it kind of depends on how long the interviewees talk. And also what sort of tracks I choose to play. Obviously, Roy's got some real epics out there. You can't really fit your 20-minute Magooins in without making a fairly long podcast. But, however, this time round I've picked some fairly short tracks to play, and I've gone for a couple of unusual ones just to sort of mix things up a bit. So I'm hoping you'll like those. News-wise, there isn't too much going on in Roy's world at the moment. I suspect he's in hibernation like the rest of us still are in the middle of the English winter. Of course, those of you in Australia or other warmer climes won't quite gather what I'm talking about, but it's pretty nasty here at the moment. Nick's in the middle of doing a big tour, as I mentioned in the last podcast, and I'm quite excited because I'm seeing him in Cambridge in March. But the thing that's turned up on the mailing list is somebody's rediscovered, or discovered for the first time, that Roy has a track on a Jethro Tull covers collection, which is called To Cry You a Song, a collection of Tull tales. And Roy does a cover of Up the Pool in a very distinctive way. And it's wonderful. And I gather that Ian Anderson took to performing it in the Roy style afterwards when he performed it live. This CD might be a little bit hard to find now. It's on Magna Carta. It came out in 1996 and the catalogue number is MA-9009-2. I was going to play it on the podcast, but unfortunately, because he's covering a Jethro Tull song, I don't have the publishing permission to put it on the podcast, and it's a long and torturous process. But if you're interested, seek that CD out, look on eBay, look on the net, and see what you can find, because it's a really nice CD, apart, in my view, from a couple of sort of American metal bands that really haven't quite got the hang of Tull. There's a completely over-the-top version of Aqualung with lots of tortured vocals and distorted guitar, and, you know, it doesn't quite do it for me. But he's got some other really good stuff on there, particularly a track by Dave Pegg. Other people on there is Mick Abrams, Clive Bunker, Glenn Cornick, Keith Emerson, John Wetton as well, actually, I noticed. So it's a good eclectic selection of tracks, well worth seeking out.
Feet are on the ground tonight, but my mind is off at the speed of light. White scarf and plastic bear floating through troposphere, troposphere. Open your mind.
The first Roy track I'm going to play today is Bank of the Dead from Life Mask. Now, on the liner notes for Life Mask, Roy says that he grew to hate this song at one point, and indeed left a magnet in the box of the master tape and managed to wipe out some of the Jimmy Page's guitar on there. Sounds a bit apocryphal to me, but whether it's true, I don't know. However, I suspect this was a classic case of the record company getting excited and talks of singles and all sorts of stuff like that, and Roy basically deciding he wanted no part of it and trying to sabotage his own career, which he has done once or twice in the past.
Places, nowhere to be. society. Insanity City. Civilization by population, with moral castration, taming the flood, making sure of survivors to keep money spiders and moon rocket riders rolling in blood. And it's all the same the world over. 20th century, stark in the red in the bank of the dead.
Now on to our interview. This is part two of the interview I did with Darren Crisp. Darren has some very interesting things to say in this second part, but I'm afraid we did have a bit of a problem with hum. His laptop was having some power supply issue where mains hum was coming through on his voice chat connection. I have tried to remove as much of that as possible, and I hope it doesn't spoil your enjoyment too much.
Speaking really. No pussyfooting around.
As I mentioned, I ended up with all of Awareness's stuff, and Roy felt that it was time to start basically looking after things himself, and that's how Science Friction became. At that point as well, EMI were very gracious and gave Roy his catalogue back, basically handed the rights to his catalogue back to him.
Oh, right. So presumably they didn't need to do that. That was just a nice gesture.
No, they didn't need to do that. What happened was that was EMI, as EMI, were having a clear out.
Right, okay.
They were having a clear out.
Car boot sale.
And basically they were looking at artists that they used to deal with years gone by and said, look, you know, okay, we're not going to do anything with this. We should offer them back. And Roy's always had a very good relationship with people at EMI.
Right.
You know, the EMI organization. So, you know, they just said, okay, there you go. There's your catalogue, which is great.
Yeah.
So Roy had, obviously, we need to get publishing sorted out and all the rest of it, but the rights were back in his hands.
Brilliant.
You know, so from that, we... I think the first thing that we decided to do was start and do some repackaging, and you know, we started to do some remastering, and I got involved in the remastering and the design of the packaging and what have you. And you know, it sort of led from there.
Yeah, and from an outsider's point of view, that sounds a lot of fun actually, because you're learning things all the time. You know, you're delving more into an industry that is was at some point new to you. It must have been a fun time.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, here was I working with somebody who brain the size of a planet. just this iconic person, really,
yeah,
who people looked up to.
Mm.
And I was in a very wonderful spot, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it was good fun. It was great fun. It was great fun. I was out on the road with him. I was doing stuff around at his place. And, you know, I was looking after doing this and doing that. And it was great. It was a great time. Really fantastic time.
I suspect, actually, that when people listen to this podcast, they'll come up with some questions or comments and bits of information for you. Maybe we'll have you back at some point in the future for a quick Q&A or something like that, because obviously there is a million and one things that we could talk about with this, and we've only got limited time. But this may spark people's interest about certain albums or events or whatever, and if you really want to get your anorak on one time and come over and delve into detail, then that would be good. But I don't want to sort of go into the minutiae here.
Yeah.
I mean, during that period of you doing all that, you and I obviously met up quite a few times, chatted on the phone, got to know each other quite well. And I think you were a very approachable, well, you are a very approachable fella. So, and I think that, you know, shows in the work that you do. So,
one of the questions that I got frequently asked was, do you ever get bored of seeing Roy live?
Right, yeah.
Do you ever get bored? There wasn't or hasn't or isn't any time when that first tour date comes along and you get in the car or you get on the bus or you do whatever transport we're in at the time, and you step into that venue, you get the biggest, and I'm going to swear here, fucking buzz ever. And I must say that it was exciting. I mean, this sounds like I'm starting to babble quite a lot here, but every single tour, every single date, this is including all the stuff that we did around Canada, the stuff that we did in Israel, the stuff that we, every single date, every single show that Roy's ever done that I've been with him, it's just give me such an absolute buzz.
Can't say further than that.
Yeah, he's just amazing. The guy does something, and it's still, his music still sends shivers down my neck. And 'cause I'm a fan as well.
Yeah.
I'm a fan, and just being able to be put into a position of working with somebody who's got this huge talent. You know?
I think the thing that happens, I mean, even from my point of view, because I'd count Roy as a friend now as well, and there comes a point when you suddenly realise that it is just a person, but it's a person with particular abilities, and they strike a certain resonance with you. And there's that transition between godlike hero towards just a person, but with these particular abilities. And if you can make that transition, then you can deal with them as a person as well as the soundtrack to your life, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. I can always remember a conversation that I had with Dave Carlin when I started to do more of Roy's shows and get more and more involved in sort of the early days of my involvement with Roy. And I used to say to Dave, well, you know, do you want to come along to a few more shows? Do you want to come along? And to which Dave said, no, you know, I'll see him once per tour, and that's how I want to leave it, because I don't want the backstage stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't want the personal stuff. I wanted to see Roy as Roy.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that is one of the things that happens when you get involved with somebody. You actually, you know, there's, you know, people, it's one thing Roy sitting on the stage, which is for 90 minutes, and everybody goes home feeling fantastic and what have you. It's another thing dealing with everything else that goes along with it.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different thing.
Well, as an artist, you're creating an illusion on stage, and everybody knows that. You know, it's a package thing, and you know that they're presenting you with the best possible illusion of, and the best possible package of songs and everything else. But, you know, warts and all, the person's there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the background stuff is it goes along with the job to a certain extent, especially the way that I got involved with Roy. You know, I mean, we all know Death or Glory. We all know.
Oh yeah.
You know, we all know that sort of story. And around that time, Roy was needing people, and you know, there was myself there, and there was Colin Kerwood. He was there on the other end of the phone.
Oh yeah, Colin's a wonderful fella. I know Colin.
You know, yeah. So you know, we had to be there for him.
Yeah.
But again, that's one side. There is another side. There's always two sides to a story. I'm not going to go into that.
Well, moving on a bit then, because I want to try and wrap things up within the next week or so. obviously, things changed. You just talked about Death or Glory, but wind on a little while, and Roy remarried to Tracy, who is wonderful. Hello, Tracy. I know you listen to these. And your role changed. What happened there, and how did you then sort of reorganise your career, if you like?
Well, so, I think everybody knows that Roy met Tracy whilst we were out in Canada with the Tea Party, touring with the Tea Party. Roy met Tracy at a show there in, I think it was in London, Ontario. I think he kept in touch with Tracy, but at the time I was, you know, basically I was doing the basic everything that was to do with Roy, really.
Right.
At that particular point, I was even booking his shows because he had parted with Jim McPhee.
Yeah.
So I was booking the shows, doing the mail order, doing the internet orders, doing the merchandise, doing this, that, and the other, and everything that was to do with it, really. Doing it from here while Roy was in Ireland. Yeah, and then Tracy came over, and it was just sort of... you know, sort of a slow progression. Obviously, Tracy was getting more involved in Roy's side of it, rather than just on the personal side of it, but more the business side of it and what have you. And I was doing the mail order thing and stuff like that, which was flourishing. And and Tracy started to get more involved in that side of it. And one thing kind of led to another, and it was a natural progression that Science Friction would actually be held, you know, be taken back on board and operated from there, because there was actually, you know, there was somebody there that could physically do it.
Right.
You know, I mean, there was nobody around prior to Tracy coming on board that could do it or would do it.
Yeah.
You know? So that was, it was all sort of in-house. So, okay, so everything got, everything got handed back over and to Ireland, basically, and Tracy took on the mail order side of things and has developed, you know, the website, and has done an absolutely fantastic job. Just all power to her.
No, she's doing brilliantly.
She is quite a phenomenal lady, and she's a wonderful lady. Yeah, so stuff got... at that particular point, I was still booking Roy, but not for too long. I did one tour, I think, after that, where I was programming the dates, and then Nigel McIntyre came on the scene, whose company is called No Third Entertainments. Roy had several conversations, I think, with Nigel, and we kind of felt that it was time to take it down a different alley.
Right.
You know, we were kind of going back to... We were doing a few clubs and stuff like that, and a few theatres and stuff like that, but we you know, Nigel had a kind of a fresh outlook on it. Nigel McIntyre, just to give you his background, is people will probably know his brother better than Nigel. His brother is Phil McIntyre, who used to do a lot of promoting in the 70s and the 80s, and now Phil McIntyre has, you know, production company and basically tours some of the biggest comedy circuit names that there are. You know, there's Lenny Henry, there's Bill Bailey, he does Peter Kay, he does all of them. Anybody use anybody on the sort of the comedy circuit, he does.
Right.
So Nigel is sort of followed in his footsteps, but Nigel's been more involved with on the music side this time. So Nigel did some tours, and I was, you know, I'm still actively involved in doing tour management and dealing with all the merchandise out on the road. One thing I must say about going out on the road, which is something I do enjoy apart from the shows
mm-hmm.
and the sort of the organisational side of things, is meeting people.
Oh, yeah.
I love meeting people who go to the shows and talking to them and finding out about people. Now, I know there's some people out there that, I'm terrible with names. I must admit it.
Join the club.
I'm terrible.
What was your name again?
I mean, I think it took me 4 years to remember Daniel Fassion.
Oh, wow, yes.
Who wouldn't remember him? But, you know, those people who do know him out there. But, you know, it took me about 4 years or four tours or whatever to actually remember his name, Daniel, for crying out loud. Wow. So there's a lot of people I know by sight, and, you know, and no disrespect, I know by sight, but not necessarily by name.
Yeah.
But that is great. You know, I've met so many people doing this job, and that is the fun. That is a fun part of it too.
Definitely,
is getting involved with people who actually pay their money to come and see the artist and go to the gig and have a good night. And people, you know, and people's opinions are very, very worth. You know, they're worth listening to. You overhear. I mean, there's some of the conversations that I've overheard whilst doing Roy's merchandising has been wonderful.
Mm.
You know, it's been fantastic. You know, so it's very interesting from that side of it. But going back, not trotting off onto a tangent, but going back, I was doing Roy's stuff, but while I was doing Roy's, I mean, obviously the mail order side of things used to take up a heck of a lot of time.
Oh yeah,
But that was around about that time I had my first child, which
now I remember that,
you know, which was fantastic and still is fantastic. So, yeah, Emily came along and she took a big part. I stopped touring quite a lot in Europe because I used to do outside of Roy's stuff. Obviously, Roy wasn't touring all the time. And when the mail order side thing stopped, I did other tour management for other people.
Right. Yeah.
You know, from the ridiculous to the sublime, some would say, in some of the people that I've dealt with along the way. But, you know, I used to do a lot of touring in Europe with one particular band, which I ended up stopping because I needed to spend more time with my family.
Well, that's perfectly understandable.
You know, so I kind of gave a lot of that in and just took the job. The odd jobs that were around the UK and what have you, and not abroad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, you know, the really nice part of doing stuff like this is actually going to places and being paid to do it.
Mm.
You know, no matter what people do say, you do get time to see places that you go and visit. I mean, you know, being from one side to the other, Canada, you know, with Roy. I've been, you know, all over Europe with a swing band called Big Rude Jake. You should check him out, by the way.
Mm.
Big Rude Jake, larger than life character. That was fantastic. You know, I've been involved with some great people, some great musicians. So yeah, tour management kind of took over from the mail order side of things.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, I know you've got a very varied working life now. We've been talking a little bit about the various people that you're dealing with and that you're going out in the road in a few months' time, you know, so.
Yeah, I did some work with a music agency, booking agency called Ad Astra.
Right.
I did a couple of years with them alongside doing tour management and stuff like that. And that actually broadened my music listening to quite an extent because I was the one who kind of picked up the strange and exotic artists that were hanging around the agency.
Okay.
The Dode Gypsies from Rajasthan, who were just fantastic. Somebody who I, again, you should, you know, people listening to this should try and check these out, some of these names. Hun Ho Tu from Tuva.
You're going to have to email me these so I can put them in the show notes.
I guess so.
I'm never going to get the spelling of that right.
Yeah. Anhor 2 from Tuva. I first saw them at Roy and I were doing the Edmonton Folk Festival in Canada, and Anhor 2 were one of the artists on the main stage. And I think, I mean, I've been to quite a number of festivals, but I think that was the only festival that when an artist has been on stage, there has been nobody backstage.
Oh.
But everybody trying to catch a glimpse of these four guys.
Oh, okay.
A spooky and most wonderful experience. And I had the privilege of working with those four guys and booking them some shows around the UK and what have you, and that was just absolutely awesome. Eleanor McAvoy. Roy will know of Eleanor McAvoy. She resides in Southern Ireland. Mm-hmm. Fantastic vocalist, guitar player, multi-instrumentalist actually. She's a wonderful person. Who else did I look after while I was at Ad Astra? The Cole Porters, Sid Griffin. Sid Griffin might ring a bell with a few people. The Long Riders, he of the Long Riders. Have you heard of the Long Riders, Paul?
No, I haven't.
No? An 80s garage band.
Oh, okay.
But Sid Griffin is, he's got his fingers into so many different things. Again, you should check him out. Who else was I looking after? Warsaw Village Band. Polish bunch of young people. Again, wonderful, wonderful music.
The thing I find interesting is that you started off with this music enthusiasm, did a fanzine, and then it's great that you've actually ended up being so involved in the music industry, if you like, but relatively untainted by it from my observer's point of view. You've got a lot of enthusiasm. You haven't become sort of bitter, twisted and cynical. Well, no more than you were originally anyway. And, I think it's...
We'll finish there then, shall we?
I think it's wonderful, you know. It's a perfect example of somebody finding a vocation that completely suits them and enjoying it, you know, obviously having hard times, but eminently suited to it. Fantastic.
Not all of it has been swimmingly, swimmingly fabulous. It's there have been occasions where it's like everybody else. They all have various crises along the way, and both sort of work and personal aside. But I've always had a passion for music. Mm. I've always had a passion for music, and like I said at the front end of this monologue, you should keep your ears open.
Yeah,
because there's so much out there.
I've been talking to various people that I interview about the state of the music industry, and in the last couple of weeks, I think we've had a press release from EMI saying they're laying off loads of people, and I think they lost, was it Robbie Williams? I can't remember.
He went on strike, bless him.
Yeah. Where's
got nothing better to do.
Well, where's all this leading?
What does going on strike mean?
Well,
sitting in his luxurious pad with his feet watching Sky News or something.
Lightening my life by not doing any more recording, but there you go. That's just my point of view. What's going to happen to these big monolithic record companies, do you think?
I think with the advent of the internet revolution, there's going to be more and more people who realise that they can do just as good a job by marketing themselves online. I mean, I'm talking about people like Roy, of Roy's ilk. Obviously, when you've got your superstars, then, they don't need to do anything, to be perfectly honest. And,
you've
got people hand over fist wanting to do stuff with them. But people on, shall we say, Roy's level, I think they've got a perfect genre to release their material and to let people have their material. I don't think necessarily that, the big labels, there'll always be the big labels.
Mm.
There'll always be one big label chewing up another one and spitting what they don't want out.
Yeah.
It's always going to be that case, and it always has been to a certain extent, But for the smaller person and the smaller operation, the internet is just ideal. It's just the ideal. EMI will always be there. whoever owns EMI. Mm. Mm. You know, it will always be there in one form or another. So you will always get your big wigs doing the wheel of dealing for the high rollers.
Well, the interesting thing that I've noticed lately is they're actually starting finally to realise that they can't quite restrict things the way they wanted to. I'm talking about DRM here, digital rights management. Mm. iTunes started up a few years ago, and every song you bought was DRM, so that it was very restricted to what you could do with it. And finally, they've changed it so if you pay a few pennies more, you get an un-DRM'd track, which you can then move around from computer to computer. And obviously, they were worried that people were just going to be buying an album and then giving it to everybody else on the internet. Mm. I don't think things work that way, and I've said this to one or two other people. When I think back to when I was a teenager, I had a good album. I used to make a tape of it for somebody and, you know, say, hey, listen to this. And eventually, if they liked it, they'd go off and buy the album anyway. And I still think that internet music has a place in the same kind of paradigm. But I think the record companies are absolutely terrified of it because it seemed like you could get a perfect copy of things and spread it around.
Unless the people who are policing the internet close down every single site that has music on that is not paid for and that goes back to the artist. Mm. Unless that is done, then people will be downloading albums.
And it's impossible to do that.
It is impossible to do that. So I really can't see there being any. People will do it. There's always, if you make something available, people will do it. You know they'll go down to the record shops. I mean, you know that Virgin and HMV and what have you, their records, their CD sales have plummeted.
Yeah.
Plummeted, you know, because basically you've got everybody sat in front of a computer. They go onto a site, they see that it's been downloaded in 320, you know,
yeah,
great sound quality, sit there, download it, that's it. They've not had to pay anything.
Well, when I interviewed Nick Harper, the interesting thing he said was that he gets...
Nick Harper, who's Nick Harper?
He gets most of his... Well, we'll talk about Nick another time, maybe. He gets most of his money through gigs and very little from the albums.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's a model that's more common now.
You know, Nick is a prime example. I mean, I know you wanted to speak about this another time, but I'm gonna go down this road anyway. I funded Nick's first two albums, first two CDs, because again, he was somebody who was writing good material, who was enthusiastic. You had to drag out of the toilet at the beginning of a gig because it was that flaming nervous.
Yeah.
You know, we get him on stage, and Nick has, you know, I mean, Nick from the first time that he did a support slot for Roy,
yeah,
on one of Roy's tours, which I think the first time he ever did it was, I think we started in Portsmouth, at a gig in Portsmouth. And I can remember, you know, going and actually physically having to get him out of the latrine and say, right, you're on, you know. But to see him there and to see him now, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a force to be reckoned with. But obviously, somebody's not seen that force. You know, a big record company could get hold of Nick and just push him out there and he'd be a household name. But he doesn't want that. Maybe he doesn't want that.
Mm.
Maybe he doesn't want that. Maybe he wants it. Maybe he doesn't want it. You know, there's one side, I think, of every artist that would love to have the bright lights, but there's also another side of it, would like to, you know, get on and just plod on as they go. Nick had a hiccup. I would call it a hiccup. The where he went off and got squoze.
Yes, completely. Completely, yeah.
I think that was a hiccup.
Right.
The things were progressing and then indigestion came in. But Nick is always going to be one that will make the most out of his gigs.
Mm.
He's a dynamic performer with a personality the size of Everest and beyond.
Well, yeah.
And again, I can't say enough about the guy. Mm. He is wonderful.
Let's come back to that another time, Darren, because I think we could have really good conversation about Nick and the Tea Party and everything else. But let's move on from there for a minute. One last question for you then before we finally wrap up and can run off to the loo, since we've been talking for about 5 hours or so it feels. What are your plans for the future, or your aspirations, shall we say?
Plans for the future is basically sort of the next job that's on the cards for going out on the road. I have built up a little network of agents, promoters, etc., who come to me now with artists who are touring in the UK and Ireland, and so I have a number of people that put work my way.
Right.
I, as I mentioned earlier, I've worked with quite a few people, names, shall we say, that people would recognise. The Fall, Katie Lang, Uri Geller.
I was about to mention him yeah. if you didn't, actually.
Yeah, Uri Geller.
Right.
And a really nice guy.
Yeah.
My goodness, there's something about him that is not of this planet.
It's been said about Roy as well, actually, but yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Uri is great. He's a great laugh. He's a really great laugh. A wonderful, wonderfully generous person. So yeah, Uri Geller, the Flaming Lips, who else? The Saw Doctors. Quite a few people. I mean, there's the people that I had privilege of meeting and working with on I finished their second tour last year, was the Proclaimers.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yeah, the Proclaimers. I did a tour with them two years.
They suddenly got popular again, didn't they?
Yeah, phenomenally popular.
Yeah.
This last tour was absolutely fantastic. You know, we kind of moved up into venues that they thought that they probably wouldn't see again.
Yeah.
You know, so we did some fantastic shows and a great bunch of people to work with. So, yeah, after I'd finished with the Proclaimers, I worked with a band called Uncle Earl, who are bluegrass.
Mm.
And it's a five-piece girl bluegrass band. So I worked with them after the Proclaimers, and we did a fantastic tour. Smaller venues, you know, completely different scale to what the Proclaimers is. But we did some small venues and sold, you know, a good 80% of the tour was sold out. Those of you will know the next person I'm about to mention, who was the producer of Uncle Earl's band, and that's John Paul Jones.
Mm.
And John came out to a number of the shows. A wonderful person to speak with, speak to. We got on pretty well. So he came out and played, which was great, you know.
Mm.
And so that was good fun. And they're coming back again. They're coming back again this year. But the next job, the job that I'm working on in a few weeks' time is, strangely enough, another bluegrass band called the Carolina Chocolate Drops. So I'm out with them for 15 days. After that, I do some dates in March with a Spanish band. I won't even try and pronounce their name. And then from April through to June, the back end of June, I'm out with a writer called Gervais Finn, who I've worked with for the past 3 years. So we're out and about on the road during that time.
So the impression
it's different. It's all different.
Well, that's, you know, what I mean? that's what I'm picking up. Yeah, you like the variety, and you want to carry on doing things and being exposed to new stuff and enjoying it and enjoying meeting people.
Yeah, it's all different. You know, Gervais Finn, is an ex-schools inspector, and I can hear people clicking off the podcast in droves. But he plays to the sort of the 40 year old upwards, is an ex-schools inspector and has written four or five best sellers that have been serialised on Radio 4, BBC Radio 4. And he's a great raconteur. He's very, very good. It's sort of it's Tales from the North.
Oh, right. Well, that sounds good.
It's very, very entertaining. And he sells out shows, you know. I mean, we did Leicester de Montfort Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And the previous evening was Motorhead, and we actually got more than Motorhead. So, you know, we had more people than Motorhead, which was, quite, you know. So there was, you know, 1,500 people in the hall and what have you, and the tech guy saying, "You got more than Motorhead. You must be part. I never heard of you."
Blimey.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's got something, you know. But yeah, it a variation. That's the great thing, you know. I mean, who can be, you know, who can be more varied than from the Fall to Uri Geller to Roy. Ah, Roy.
Well, Darren, thank you ever so much for giving me so much of your valuable time this morning.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I mean, I know you edit these things slightly to get the ums and ers out, but yeah. I do hope that once it's all pieced together, that I haven't rambled too much. It's actually coherent and a fairly decent timeline there. You know, what you got to understand is that there is so much more.
Yeah,
you know, there is a lot, and you know, I guess at some point I should sort of sit in front of the computer and write all this down, because even just, you know, talking to you today, the whole sort of James Varda thing that came back.
Oh, yeah.
Some, you know, little things pop out and what have you. You know, so stuff like that. I tell you what you should do, people who are listening out there. And I know Roy's got it because I sent it back to him. Andy Ware managed to get the decaying film of Roy at the Albert Hall.
Ah.
Back in 1970 odd blob, which Jimmy plays a part in, MCP Blues, he plays, which I think is the version that found its way onto Flashes from the Archive.
Was there audio with that? Because I always heard that the visuals were available, but the audio track had been lost.
No, there's audio.
Oh, well, there we go. That's a bit of a campaign for us then, isn't it?
There's audio there. Now, what ended up happening is that it's a fantastic piece. And I'm sorry to go on for another hour and a half, but because of the degradation of the film, they couldn't actually put it through the proper process, telecine
or whatever it is, yeah.
Exactly. So what ended up happening is that they actually had to project the image onto a screen and actually film.
Oh, crikey.
The screen, you know. So it's not wonderful quality by any means, but and as I say, Roy has the tapes that Andy did, and I know I've still got a copy.
Yeah.
Knocking around. But if it was treated and it was done, you know, if it had a good treatment, that would be a wonderful piece of archive stuff to release.
It would, wouldn't it?
Because I know Roy's always spoken about putting a video together of old footage and that and the other. And I know we had it when I was working sort of very, very closely with Roy on all this stuff. We had tons and tons of footage, you know, from the Old Grey Whistle Test and from Glastonbury, from I know the Glastonbury thing's been showed on TV and you know, the Glastonbury. There's all stuff that we shot ourselves at the shows, loads and loads of stuff. But there's one or two pieces that are of archive stuff which are really good. And I know Roy was very reluctant to do anything with it at the time because of the quality.
Yes.
And there was out of the hour of footage that was managed to be captured, there's probably 30 minutes of good quality, of decent quality, But I think in the right treatment and a bit of, you know, it needs sort of colorizing and stuff like that because of the quality. And in the right treatment, I think that would be a corker to put on, even if it's just 10 minutes. Mm. I mean, Nick's on there.
Mm.
You know, there's a little...
Oh, I'd love to see that. Yeah.
Nick's on there as a little lad and what have you. And just bits and stuff like that. Just came to mind. It just came to mind,
yeah.
You know, that there is so much stuff that is available or would be available. But I think Roy... the other thing is also, is Roy always wanted to... He didn't want to sort of look at what's gone by. He wanted to do... He wanted to see what was coming.
Yeah, that's
so
human nature.
To some extent, there was a reluctance when I was sort of saying, God, we've got this, you know, we've got this to do. You know, we can do this, we can release this. We've got there's the Rainbow concert.
Mm.
There's the whole of the Rainbow concert with All and Sundry that played there. I know there is a tape out there. There is a tape that's knocking around because I received a tape of. I'm not talking about footage. I'm talking about audio.
Yeah.
But there is a tape, an audience tape, knocking about. I received it years and years ago. And you know, some of it is truly awful.
Mm.
It's really sort of. It does sound like a bunch of mates down the pub, you know, sort of all over the bloody place.
Right.
But some of it, but as an archive piece, I don't think a lot of people would be bothered.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know, it would only be your purist, you know, or the media saying, why on earth is this being released? You know, they're out of tune here and there. But as a piece of history, because that's what it is. It's a piece of history, music history, that is there. I'm going to probably get an angry phone call from Tracy or Roy saying, what are you doing mentioning all these
things?
Well,
there you go.
People are bugging me. People are bugging me. What are you doing?
The campaign starts here.
But, you know, there is stuff there. There is stuff out there that I feel would be well received to those people who are Harper nuts.
Yeah.
That want anything and everything.
Yeah. So, Darren, thank you ever so much once again for giving me the ultimate brain dump, I'd say. I'm going to have fun editing this down, and I hope that we can meet again in the future and do some more Q&A and go into some more detail. But once again, thank you very much indeed.
It's been my pleasure. And hello to those people out there who I've not said hello to for quite a long time.
Okay. Thanks.
I am on the end of an email, so.
Thanks a lot, Darren, for that. I really enjoyed conducting that interview, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it as well. I've spoken to Darren since we did the interview about the potential of doing a kind of follow-up thing, and I think what we might do is open up a little Q&A thread on the stormcock.net forum so that you can post questions and comments about what he talked in the interview and possibly stuff he left out, with a view to doing a follow-up. Now, we may have a go at doing a live chat on stormcock.net. There's a sort of text-based chat room there. But also, Darren's roaming around the country later in the year, and he's going to pop by at some point. So I might do a little follow-up face-to-face interview with him rather than trying to use the Skype telephony thing. And I think that might come out a bit better anyway. So watch this space and keep your eye on the forums, and we'll see where we can go with that. Okay, next track. I've chosen something from the Dream Society, which isn't an album I've featured before on the podcast, and I've picked Angel of the Night. I think this is a really strong driving track, and I like it very much.
When my madness comes, it comes in waves. Overpowered by my slaves, my balance and my spirit and my guts are not my own. Standing on the precipice, eternally alone. One step out of sight,
Now it's time for the A to Z of Harper. This time around it's G, and yes, I could have taken the easy option and gone for Green Man, following up on El Rose's little rant on the interview a couple of podcasts ago. But I'm going to have a rejoinder to that later on in the year with an interview with somebody who can defend the Green Man and wants to defend its virtue. What I've chosen instead is a lovely little track. It's Goodbye from Flat Baroque and Berserk. Now, Flat Baroque is a brilliant acoustic-based, well, mainly acoustic album. It was the first one that Roy had proper production values on when he joined the Harvest record label, and it's full of, absolutely packed full of gems. goodbye. I'm going to read you the little bit of commentary in Roy's wonderful book, The Passions of Great Fortune, which you can look at and purchase from his website if you haven't got a copy, which you do need to have. What he says is this: I often feel like leaving. Betrayals, misconceptions, but then I fall in love again and I love what I do, but it doesn't stop me from wanting to just walk away from it all. The massive brick wall. I felt ostracized for most of my life, and that feeling certainly doesn't diminish with time. I wonder whether those of us who are made to feel that in our early lives then create mechanisms which automatically perpetuate the condition. Leastways, in my own particular case, I'm able to read cynicism in the dark. There's a lot of it about, and I've always reacted badly to it.
Your conscience rolls in torrents down each side of your face. Your chair is full of silence. Your hand is full of lace. You say that you should have been by him when the bullets laid his head. Strange, it's always the living who fear the idea of the dead. Goodbye. Said that we were great until your instant riches made us second rate. Well, you know you're the same old hangman who rationalizes hope, whose left hand pats my children and whose right hand holds a case full of rope. Crystal of his eye, and he jumps into the rain pools as the people pass him by. He rubs the dusty ages across his tender brow. He laughs and cries and sniffs and sighs. It's for long summers now. Clover meadows in the dandelion days. She throws her golden shadows across the silver haze. She wanders with the swallows in the noonday passion place. She sits beneath the willows and she waits for me in twilight to come our ways.
Quick skip through feedback. Once again, I'm afraid I don't have any voicemails. Come on, people, don't be shy. But I did get quite a lot of text-based feedback on the website. Dave Burnham said, "It was great to hear Darren again. Seems like ages since we saw him last. Splendid fellow and genuinely interesting and enjoyable to listen to. I recall spending several hours in the workers' beer tent at Glastonbury with him back in 1990, chewing the fat, or possibly the cud. If there's a basement or two full of hors d'oeuvres, I wonder if it'd be worth sussing out how many of which issues and finding out some way of selling them to interested fans. Oh, and by the way, what colour underpants does Roy wear then?" Okay, Barry says hors d'oeuvres is usually in demand on eBay, so there's obviously some money to be made there, Darren. Dr. Doom the Optimist, a.k.a. Adam, said, "Just listened this morning. Good show again. It was interesting to hear that stuff from Darren about the fanzine, awareness, etc. I got into Roy in 1987 and it brought back a lot of memories. Also, I too have just got the Prisoner 40th Anniversary box set. My bestest Xmas present. The Don't Knock Yourself Out documentary was fascinating. McGowan clearly lost it towards the end, shouting at directors and really fighting with the cast. Anyway, keep up the good work with the podcasts. Any chance of interviewing the main man himself in the future?" To which I can only reply, wait and see. LA Drain says, "Another fine piece of journalism, Paul. Nice to get Darren's views on things from his very close involvement. It's spooky, as I've just been reading the prison articles in Hors d'oeuvres 5. That is pretty spooky, isn't it? Okay, I had a fair bit of feedback about the episode length. Some people said, yeah, we love it, whatever the length, but I think in general people agree that perhaps, you know, CD length is probably a good thing, so I'll do my best to keep to that. Kenny Wisdom said, "I really, really enjoyed the Darren Crisp interview. Overall, the standard still remains excellently high. Paul, these are a real treat. On the A to Z, I'm intrigued how you're going to pull this off. Anyone want to guess on the tricky letters?" We shall see. Sean says, "Me too. Looks like X and Q will be nigh impossible unless anyone has any ideas." I replied to that saying, "I have all the letters planned out and meticulously detailed on a large A3 wall chart directly above the microphone. Months of planning prior to the podcast mean I am not prepared in any way and have everything arranged to the smallest detail and will never get caught out by difficult letters. And if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you to." Sadfish, who is a relation to Mr. Pete Cunliffe, said, "Good to see our kid getting a mention. I remember all the hard work he used to put in sticking all the articles together for the fanzine all those years ago." "Oh yes, the smell of cow gum in the morning will never leave me," he says. Okay. Pete Cunliffe himself says, "The podcast was brilliant, Paul. Good to hear from Darren. Maybe I can help him compile that special hors d'oeuvre issue. Don't know if you can still get cow gum, though." Wee Steve said, "Perfect way to start the day, especially this day. Lovely to hear Mr. Crisp. How I miss his magic briefcase full of goodies at gigs, although the sad demise of awareness did not make comfortable listening, I often wondered. It was particularly good to hear slightly different versions of our favourites like Highway Blues and Magoon's. A nice theme, that idea. As always, more ink to your biro, or whatever it is to construct this pod thing. Well, mainly electrons, actually, I suppose. Jim says, love the podcast as always, but I wanted you to ask Darren for my money back. I subscribed to 4 hors d'oeuvres magazines in the 90s and I only got one. Then they never published any more. He owes me a few quid. Only joking. Meanwhile, I have them all from 12 to the last, but none before that. Who has the lot? Keep up the good work, James. Barry replied saying, I've got them all. And then there was a little bit of argy-bargy about who had what episode and whether they'd be able to do some swaps or whatever. Sean says, Darren had some good tales to tell. Roy forgetting the lyrics at gigs was a regular occurrence and at the time was just the norm for a Roy performance. Wondering what I got up for. Looking forward to the second instalment. And finally, Harper PR, aka Lynn, said, I loved HDO. Bring it back. When we were doing the installs last summer, I noticed at the time that when we were in Jack's Records in Sheffield, they had quite a few HDO back issues on the racks. Maybe worth trying there. Okay, thanks a lot, all of you, for your comments. I really appreciate them, whether they're in text or in voice. I'm only joking about the voice. I know it's a bit daunting for people to ring up and leave an audio message. But all feedback is very much appreciated. And as I said before, I am going to be opening up a Darren Crisp Q&A thread on the Stormcock forums so that we can follow up on some of the stuff he talked about in his podcast and do a bit of planning for later in the year. Another track now, and this is one I wanted to play last month in the prisoner-themed podcast. This is Woman from Work of Heart. This isn't an album I've concentrated on at all thus far. I kind of don't like it as much as most of the rest of Roy's work, although I haven't listened to it for a long time, so perhaps I should really give it a good old go and get my teeth into it. Be interesting to hear what the rest of you think about it.
Desire, new romantic surprise.
We're nearly at the end now and the clock is ticking. So, copyrights first of all. This podcast is issued under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK England and Wales license, which means you can share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. The introductory music is by Adam Leonard. You can get all of your Roy Harper music needs and also the lyric book from royharper.com, where there's an online shop. How to help the podcast? Well, we've had reviews on iTunes, but the more the merrier. If you get this podcast through iTunes, please take the time to go and give it a little bit of a rating and possibly a review. If you want to help financially, there's a PayPal button on stonecock.net that you can use to contribute towards the internet costs and equipment costs of the podcast. No obligation. If you do want to leave a voicemail, the number is 01223 850 282, plus 44 1223 850 282, or you can just mail me pd@stormcock.net or podcast@stormcock.net. They all go to the same place, or you can leave comments on the forums and the website itself. Okay, that wraps it up for this month. Next month is April and we'll have a new interviewee. I'm busy editing that down as we record this one. And I'm going to finish off now with Life Goes By from the Today Is Yesterday album.
Life goes by through the sky, and nothing to do with you and I. The kind who just don't mind the sort of thing that's happening inside young people. Nowadays they seem to think they own the blasted world. Long hair and queer ideas, give me the garden shears, I'll turn all that joy to tears. With a short back in sight and a scrub in the sides, they'd be very surprised. Life goes by through the sky, nothing to do with you and I. We're the kind who just don't mind the sort of thing that's happening inside old people. Though someday I may be bold, I'll never be that old. Long combs and baggy panties, a bingo and Bible antis, a huddled in pubs and shanties. It's a shame they're so scared, they could really have cared if they'd only have dared. Why not spend your lifetime grabbing everything that you can buy? Life is very long and you can buy plenty more when you die. Life goes by through the sky, had nothing to do with me and I. We're the kind who just don't mind the sort of thing that happens when I'm singing to you. Trying to say is really just a joke. So now you can plant your roses right up your disgusted noses, along with your crows and shoses, and count the rest of the sheep in a fidgety heap as they make it to sleep. Yeah. Life goes by Congratulations, sir. You